listening to the Transform Your Nutrition Podcast with your hosts, Rebecca Heald and Jeff Ash. Our purpose is to help individuals and families transform their relationships with food and develop healthy bodies, minds, and attitudes, all without restriction, guilt, or shame.
So, hi, Jeff.
Hey.
2 weeks till Christmas Day.
That's very true. And you've got your festive attire on, and I have my horrible Dallas Cowboys shirt on. We're doing pathetic this year. American football. Yes, American football. We are the scourge of the league almost.
I see. I know nothing about American football, sorry. But your shirt's not horrible. It's quite nice.
It's just a nice little star on the front.
Exactly. But yeah, I'm festive today. It's Christmas jumper day. Kids have gone to school in Christmas jumpers, so I couldn't escape it.
Yep.
And also, I thought that it tied in quite nicely with our topic for today. So we're going to be talking about alcohol and festive food, play food over the festive season, aren't we today?
Yes. Great topic. Good timing for it.
I think so. Because I think it's something that a lot of people have a lot of questions and some stress and anxiety about as well at some times, about what they should be doing, what they should be allowing, etc. So I think it's a really great topic for us to delve into today.
Yeah, definitely. And especially anybody who is currently on some kind of weight loss journey or just trying to be more mindful of their health and all those kinds of things. This time of year can be very stressful because they're thinking, well, I've been doing so well, I've been making good progress, and now the holidays, it's kind of my kryptonite, it's going to completely derail me, all right? Yeah. I mean, it's such a common fear for people and a common concern. Even people who aren't necessarily doing anything intentional right now, they think of the holidays often as the time when they put on the holiday weight, kind of go even further down the road of health challenges and that kind of thing. So great topic to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what you've said there as well, it's a difficult time to navigate, isn't it? Because everywhere we look, there's, you know, lots of yummy festive foods tempting us. And then obviously as well, there's this thing of people stocking up their trolleys and buying, even though all the shops tend to be open, even in the middle of a pandemic.
Yes.
they only shut for a day or two, yet people tend to kind of overstock on food. I mean, I don't know about you, but there are sometimes I'm still finding Christmas food in my cupboards, you know, in April and May.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a cultural thing as well, isn't it? And we've talked about that before, haven't we, about often our food choices and habits, etc., are linked to our cultural and beliefs, etc., and social functioning. So I think that's a good thing as well to mention, that it's, you know, no matter what kind of habits or plan you may be following, it kind of disappears into the background at this time of year because of everything that's just going on around us.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, we talk often about the fact that the food environment in our culture, in our societies, you know, the UK and US are very similar in that food environment, in that it makes it very challenging to eat in a way that is good for us to manage our food intake, whether it's the influences of media, just the kinds of foods that we tend to have around, the different activities that we're involved in, scheduling, all of those things. The holidays make the food environment even more challenging. You know, I was just at the grocery store yesterday and it's jam-packed full of all the holiday pastries and treats, and they all look so enticing because they're different too. Then, you know, it's one thing, you sort of become desensitized to the chocolate cakes and the things that you see every time you go to the grocery store. But when you start seeing all these festive holiday treats, you're like, oh, I haven't had that in a long time. Oh, wow. Bark, you know, the peppermint bark. Oh, I haven't had that in forever. And so all these different things can make it really difficult if you are, you know, if that's an area that you struggle with.
Yeah, well, I think even when it's not, you know, I think it's just suddenly all of a sudden there's just all these lovely things. So even when you've got a very healthy relationship with food, it's an easy time to kind of, you know, end up overeating because of all the nice things that are suddenly on the shelves. And, you know, what you just mentioned there, and I think we spoke about this briefly in the week, didn't we? Because I've got my panettone. We love panettone in this house. And obviously, if you're in Italy right now, you'll just be bombarded. Panettone will be everywhere, massive panettones. And then obviously, I did my shopping this weekend and we've got panettones. And my kids are like, yes, yes. So we've got our panettone ready. So yeah, I think, and it's an exciting, the thing is, we've got to remember that it's an exciting time. It's an enjoyable time. And the other thing is that, you know, we've spoken before about how food has an emotional attachment, because it's, you know, it's about fun times. It's about nice times. It's about happy times. And that's good. That's okay. You know, and so again, you know, right from childhood, we'll remember this period of time as being a time when we do eat and we drink and we have mm-hmm. fun. And then yeah. when we then try to, so it's almost part of our values. So when we try and limit that and tell ourselves that we can't because we're trying to lose weight, or, you know, then it becomes difficult because there's that dichotomy, isn't there? And there's that right. mismatch.
Well, and it's such an integral part of the holiday celebrations and the holiday time, you know, this time that we're in. And, you know, I was kind of thinking about this, and, you know, when you start to withhold or restrict different aspects of these different social events, then it impacts your enjoyment of that event. And so it's much like if you decided to read a book at a family gathering rather than interacting with your family, you're missing out on the interaction with the family. If you choose to completely avoid your favorite foods, traditional foods that you've always enjoyed for your entire life at those family gatherings, it's like you're withholding yourself from enjoying that particular event to its fullest. And so just like with anything else, it's going to be most healthy for us emotionally if we can find a way to really enjoy every yes. aspect of the event that's going on, so we can completely immerse ourselves in it and get the full benefit of every part of that, whether it's the laughing, the playing, the building a snowman, if you happen to have snow in Texas here, it was almost 80 degrees yesterday, so we have no snow in sight. But yeah, so you want to be able to enjoy all of those things, and the food is such a big part of it. And so we need to find ways that we can enjoy that, not feel bad about it, not feel guilty, not feel like we have to rush off to the gym to burn off the calories from the panettone, which, by the way, they had at Walmart yesterday, so I'm going to be picking one up.
Yes.
So yeah. I've never had it, so...
I love the one because they have ones with like raisins and candied peel and stuff like that in it. But my kids, they like plain. So they're just like the plain one with the icing sugar on top. And it's ace. I love it. I have it toasted as well. So when it's going a bit, because we buy a massive one. And then, but no, exactly. And I think this is the thing, is that when you're, you know, when your food choices start to impact on your social functioning, it's having an impact on your well-being, isn't it? And you know, that's exactly the route that we want to help people to avoid, I think.
Yeah, well, that brings up a good topic here, which is, what do we call these kinds of foods? Because oftentimes people think of them as junk food. And this is probably a good time to talk about them, because you and I both, I find myself slipping up. I'm very conscious to not use the word junk food, but I do find that because it's so conditioned in us that I refer to these things, it just comes out sometimes. I'll be talking and mention junk food. But I really try and be conscious of referring to it in terms of play food, fun foods, treats, whatever it is, some other term that takes that negative connotation off of it. And maybe you can explain why we feel that that's important to do.
Yeah, well, I think it's you know, and I talked about this in a workshop that I did this week. And I think it's, when we talk about junk, what springs to mind when we talk about junk? Okay, something to be discarded, something to be wasted, something to, and I'm not just talking about food, I'm talking about like junk in general, the word. It's something to be thrown on the trash heap. If you had some junk in your house, you'd throw it in the bin. Yeah?
Yeah.
Now, if we use that word when it comes to food, it literally automatically gives it no value. It gives it an emotional attachment as well, because, okay, this is junk. This is something that should be avoided. This is something that is not good for me. When actually, you know, a little bit of junk, so we're talking about overly processed foods, you know, sweet foods that are high in fat, high in sugar, etc. They're actually, you know, they are okay in the context of, you know, a well-balanced, healthy diet. And I like to, and you know, I've spoken to you about this, Jeff, before, but the way that I like to explain it is that, you know, for the most part, think about a child that's at school, okay? And for the most part of the day, they're working hard, they're studying, they've got their lessons. Now, that is what your the most part of your diet should look like. You know, your meals should be constructed around, you know, general guidelines and principles that are going to best support your health. But then you have play times, don't you? You have a couple of play times at when you're at school because you need to offload, you need to unwind. It's good for your social skills. It's good for your emotional development. And that's exactly how we should be thinking about, you know, these foods, okay? They should be play foods. They should be something that should be integral and a part of your everyday life, but of course not taking over. If we all played every day, that wouldn't be productive, okay? But allowing it within your diet helps you to be a better rounded, healthier person.
Right. So the main focus or the main thing that we should think about with these things is that what makes them play foods, fun foods, or foods that we shouldn't incorporate as the bulk of our diet is simply that they don't have the nutrient content that our body needs to function well. So we get a lot of energy, which is very beneficial to us, but we don't get much of the other good stuff that should come along with that energy intake, because we need those vitamins and minerals and fiber, you know, and all of these other factors and protein. So we need these nutrients and these things in our body, which is why we should try and incorporate the bulk of our diet from these nutritious foods that provide nutrition. But just like you said there with the playtime, that playtime is also important as well. And so we can incorporate these foods. It's not like they're poison. Often they get demonized to the point where people think of them as poison. And really what they are is it's just a food that's been processed and a lot of the nutrient content has been removed. Yeah. And now you're left with this, with the energy, but without those nutrients. And it's much like something where cheese, as an example, cheese is milk, and we removed certain parts of the milk and we processed it down to a different kind of a food. And it doesn't mean that now this cheese is something that's bad. It's just certain parts have been removed from it. And so we have a different form of that food. And we can kind of think of these fun foods and play foods in a similar way. We're not poisoning ourselves by them. And again, it comes down to what makes up the bulk of our diet.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tend to think of like the play foods and the fun foods and stuff, is like I said, as being kind of those, you know, the foods that are quite high in fat, high in sugar, mm-hmm. your chocolate, your crisps, all those kind of things. And I think, what you mentioned exactly there, they are energy dense. And this is how I explain it to my children as well. You know, these foods give you lots of energy, mm-hmm. okay? But they're not nutrient dense, okay? So more whole fresh foods are nutrient dense. So they give you everything that your body needs to function well, okay? So, yeah, and that's how I kind of try to explain it to my children as well. They're not to be discarded. They're not to be ignored. But the other really important thing to remember as well is that our bodies function best with nutrient dense food, you know, from a physiological point right. of view. Okay, so our bodies do want, when we listen to our bodies, they want the nutrient dense food in a lot more, in a lot bigger portions. Think of it as like macro and micro, you know. Yeah. They want the nutrient dense food on a macro level, okay, and they want the other stuff on a micro level, because actually that is just that, you know, the other foods are kind of just fulfilling an emotional need. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? They trigger reward systems, you know, the neurotransmitters in our brains, etc. But as long as you are not focusing on those all of the time and you're allowing those within, like I said, within the context of a healthier diet, then your reward system will be functioning appropriately so that your body will actually be getting, you know, all of its energy, etc. And it will be wanting all of the nutrient-dense food most of the time. Did I explain that very well?
Yeah, that's great. And you know, so much of what we talk about too with managing our food intake comes down to controlling our hunger, our hunger, our satiety, so our appetite. And so much of health comes down to regulating the amount of energy and food that we take into our body. Because if we take in too much, it can cause a problem. But likewise, if we don't take in enough, it can also cause a problem. Exactly. And so what we find, and we find this in research, and we won't go into that here, but there's plenty of research that supports this, that when we put in nutrient-dense foods into our body responds much more effectively to the impact of those foods on our appetite. And so when we take in the nutrient-dense foods, it dials down our hunger in a way that we're in our body. It tells our body, hey, I've had enough. I don't need any more. When we take in the more highly processed things, it doesn't have the same effect to the same extent. And so then you can more easily overeat. But again, coming back to what we're talking about here with these fun foods, if you're just enjoying them as a small part of your overall diet, and especially at the holidays, we're talking about So in some cases, especially now with all the parties and things being canceled, we're talking about 1 or 2 days. So yeah, even then, it's even less than normally. You know, normally, at least here in the U.S., it goes Thanksgiving through New Year's is kind of a big one month of feasting. Well, now with all the parties and stuff canceled, that's probably reduced to some extent. And so it's even easier this year, I would say, in some ways to maybe manage that.
I'll be interested to see how that plays out, because I kind of thought that, but then also as well, a lot of people, and one of my clients today, she said to me, you know, it's kind of like, it's almost started now because there's not anything we can do. We can't can't go out. So, you know, I've got all this food at home. I'm making this mulled wine and I've got nothing to do. So actually, So it'd be interesting. It will be interesting because I think it could play out either way.
Yeah. These dishes that that you make for a gathering of 10 people, now you're still making them, but now there's just two of you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Very good point.
But it all comes down, and I've been talking to a client about this today as well, it all comes down to, doesn't it? Two things, really. And, well, they are interlinked, but it is about, again, trusting your body and letting your body guide you. And, you know, the point you made earlier about when we are focusing on whole unprocessed foods for the most part of our diet, it becomes easier. So, you know, if you are not, if you've got a heavily processed diet right now, you know, just slowly making some changes to incorporate more whole foods. And over time, you will find that your body will reward you more for that and you'll feel better for that. But, you know, it's just, you know, but do it slowly. I would never tell anybody to completely overhaul their diet all overnight. But then on the other, conversely, it's the other way, isn't it? So it's about, if you're restricting, it's about then allowing yourself those foods as well. Because, and this is one thing I was talking to my client about today, she sometimes struggles with play foods. And, you know, she allows them, she does allow them within her diet behaviorally, but emotionally and psychologically, she's still placing restrictions on herself.
Yeah.
So she's still feeling that she has to portion it out, which can be a good bridge. It can be a good bridge if you're moving from completely not trusting your body to then wanting to trust your body. Then, you know, using an external portion, you know, control guidance, it can be useful. But she's also found now that that's kind of backfiring on her, especially if she has had a drink. Because she's finding that because she's applying that kind of, she's still trying to control it when she's had a drink, it's going, oh, sod it, you know. Do you know what I mean? So it's about rebuilding trust in your body. And yeah, I think that that is really important in terms of, so there are two things. So I went a bit off there. You know, it's about questioning your restriction, even if you are allowing it behaviorally, are you allowing it psychologically at this time of year?
Yeah.
And also as well about, you know, slowing down, listening to your body, start to pay attention to it, start to trust it, because then you will, you're less likely to overeat when you're listening to your body, because your body naturally knows when enough is enough.
Yeah, that's a good point with what that you brought up there about the difference between psychologically and actually allowing it. Yeah. And that brings up a good point, because we can sort of, oftentimes the psychological part comes along second. So sometimes we have to be intentional about going ahead and going through the process of enjoying those foods, saying, I still feel guilty about it, but I'm going to go ahead and incorporate it and try and get into this habit of incorporating these things that I've been restricting. And then hopefully then as you do that, and as you see, you know what, this is not being detrimental to my body. My body is still, I'm still doing just fine because I've done so many other things to improve my my eating habits and other health promoting behaviors and those kinds of things, that now you see it isn't as detrimental as everybody has been telling you, or as you've thought over the years, and now the psychological will come along with it. And I think a lot of things happen in that order. We sometimes have to go ahead and do something, and then eventually then our feelings will catch up with that. We see that in relationships, maybe when we're struggling, you know, when we're helping someone with a marriage, and, you know, we're not marriage counselors, but, you know, I've talked with people over the course of the years in those areas. And sometimes it's like, you know what, I'm not really feeling these ooey gooey feelings about my spouse anymore. So you tell them, why don't you do some things, and you start to get in this habit, and then those feelings eventually just start to catch up. And we see that. And I think that can happen with food also.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing point you've made there, actually. And there's, because I think there's two points I want to make on that as well. And I think what you've said there, absolutely, because this is exactly what I do with my clients as well. I get them to, you know, do the positive, you know, behaviors,
right,
and then collate the evidence around that. So if they're they're realizing that actually allowing themselves a bit of chocolate, they didn't overeat it, and that's okay. And I get them to write it down. I get them to, because actually when you start writing it down and connecting with it, I mean, the evidence is there to show that when you write things down, it sticks in your brain, and your brain makes new pathways so that it builds new reward systems, and yeah, et cetera. Does that? So I think what you said there is spot on. Once your brain has got the evidence that the action you are taking is making positive progress, it then becomes easier over time. And change becomes quicker when your brain computes these actions. But I think also as well, what you mentioned about psychologically you catching up. Yeah, I do agree with that. I definitely do, because of, like I've just said, when your brain's got the evidence. But I also think, and this is something that's worthwhile doing, and it's something I do with clients as well. So I work on the both hand. I work on the two side by side.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the behavioral stuff is easier to start doing. In small steps, okay? Because then you start to see the impact. You start to realize that bit of ice cream is not going to mean you're going to put 6 pounds on them scales, you know?
Right.
And you start to realize it doesn't have, you know, so when you start to see the evidence. But then there is also this thing, you know, guilt comes from a mismatchment between your actions and your values, no matter whether those values are skewed or not. So what I often do is get my clients to figure out where the guilt is coming from. So it's because, okay, you're feeling guilty because underlying, you know, your value system is telling you that chocolate is wrong. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's why you have it. So it's about unpicking those values as well.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it is. It's just this multifaceted approach that we have to take. And again, you know, I'm talking about relationships here as a kind of an analogy, but we see that with relationships too. So not only do we have to put that action in to kind of bring our emotions alongside, but we also have to check the psychological side of things if we want those actions to be in line with it too. So, you know, you have, you know, coming back to relationship here, if you have a guy who's always looking at other women, you know, even if he doesn't act on it, eventually at some point he may start acting on it. But if he can get if he can get himself in check and stop doing that and refocus on, you know, on his spouse, then often those actions will then come in line and he begins to treat her better and he begins to look at her in a different way and all these different things. And so again, just like with food, it's amazing because we sometimes put food off in this whole other category when really it comes down to human behavior and psychology. And that's really what it's just a different, you know, there's just a different set of circumstances that are in play there with the food. So yeah, that's just a great, great point that you made there also.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And absolutely. A lot of behavior change comes down to the bigger field of psychology very often.
Yeah. Now, what about alcohol? How do you see that as a fun food, play food, something? Should that be categorized a little bit differently? How do we look at that?
I tend to approach it in exactly the same way with clients. It's so funny, you know, because actually I sent a client home the other week and I said, go and buy yourself some wine and have it in the kitchen. You know, because she was like, I can't have wine because I'll drink it. I'll just drink the whole lot. You know, I can't allow myself wine. I was like, go. And she bought two bottles of wine. And she said to me at the time, she said, I will not be able to have a bottle of wine open in my house or, you know, without drinking it. And she came to our next session just a week later. And she's like, I bought two bottles of wine. She goes, I've still got half a bottle open in my kitchen on the side that, you know, I'm not bothered about, you know, where yeah. She thought if she allowed it, she would just. So anyway, yeah, no, for me, it's, you know, same kind of principle, you know. Again, our body doesn't like it when we have too much alcohol in one go. Yep. And it does have a negative impact on, you know, on all sorts of different levels if we drink too much alcohol in one go. You know, we can't metabolize it as well. So it has an impact on how we're metabolizing other foods that we've had that day if we drink a lot of alcohol in one go. Mm-hmm. However, and obviously then there's the whole hangover thing, which then impacts right. on our activity levels and our food choices. And this is a little bit like when you overeat. Fun foods, okay, they have a negative impact. But when you have them in moderation, when you allow yourself, so I always say to clients, if you like a glass of wine, have a glass of wine. Research has actually shown as well that women that drink moderately, so I think it's like a glass a day, it's up to 6 glasses of wine a week or something like that, actually are less stressed and manage their weight much better than women who restrict or don't drink at all. So, you know, actually allowing yourself a glass of wine is not a bad thing. It's about, it all comes down to context and it all comes down to, you know, allowing yourself it and then not binging on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just another type of food beverage that some of us like to incorporate in our life. Now, if you don't like alcohol, then that's fine. If you have a problem with alcohol, we're not addressing that. So if there's anybody who has an alcohol problem, we're talking about someone who it's not an issue for them to drink. And so certainly including that in that same category of fun foods, you know, you're getting in calories because alcohol has 7 calories per gram. So you are getting calories from it. So energy does come in without nutrients. But again, it comes down to how you incorporate that into the broader context of your eating.
But again, and you know, it's also, and I meant to say this earlier as well, when it comes to fun foods, a lot, you know, some people, I see some people who restrict all week, then it comes to the weekend and they overdo the fun foods and undo any calorie deficit or anything that they've worked on all week. We see this all the time, don't we? So that people have treat days or cheat days or whatever. Now, to me, it should be about allowing yourself a little bit and often, okay? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise you are... And it's the same with alcohol. You know, people end up thinking, I'm not going to have a drink. And then at the weekends or, you know, when an event comes up, they binge on it. So it's the same. And then it has the negative impact. Okay. And it's the same. I think the same thing applies. And I think the other thing as well is very often I find clients also as well, if they're going to have a drink, they compensate by not eating well, by not eating properly. And that again has a negative impact because all that ends up doing is meaning that the alcohol is going to affect you quicker. You're going to get the munchies, you know, the next day you're going to have already hangover. You know, why is it you have that gnawing feeling the day after drinking too much? Because your body needs energy to recover. So, you know, restricting your food only then, I mean, you know, it makes it worse. It exasperates the situation. So I always say to clients, if you're going to go and you're going to have a drink, make sure that you have a good, nutritious, you know, focus on protein and fiber, you know, before you drink, have a snack before you go to bed as well, so that you're not leaving yourself wide open to having no energy and also just feeling that you want to crave greasy food that's not going to make you feel great.
Yeah, those are all great points. And with alcohol in particular, it is a chemical substance that does cause a relaxing effect on people. Yeah. And so a lot of people enjoy a glass of wine at the end of a day to help unwind from work, not in a way where they're drinking enough to mask their, you know, in the emotional issues that they're not dealing with, but just a general kind of way of relaxing, just like many of us use caffeine to kind of perk us up. Some people just like that nice relaxing effect that alcohol has on them. And if you start to take that out of your diet, and now you're missing out on that thing that's helping you unwind and relax at the end of the day, what are you going to be replacing it with? Because at some point, you probably will be replacing it with something. And if you're replacing it with eating emotionally, keep in mind, I mean, we're talking to people who are probably health conscious and thinking of how can I continue to make progress on my with my health endeavors right now. And a lot of people, they're trying to lose weight or just control their body weight. And so we're talking about this in that context. And if you are taking out alcohol because you think, well, I can't drink alcohol if I'm trying to lose weight. And then now you're compensating for that loss of that enjoyable thing at the end of the day by consuming two or three times as much additional food as a result of that, then you've sort of undone what it was that you were trying to accomplish.
I am testimony to that as well. I do enjoy a glass of wine. I don't drink to excess, but I do enjoy a glass of wine. And if I say to myself, right, I'm not going to drink now, I'll just end up eating chocolate. And it's interesting, you know, a bit of one anecdote. It's interesting. I remember when I tried to put alcohol out once, and I think I ended up gaining weight because I just ended up eating instead, you know. But it's not because, you know, and like you said then, it's, you know, the other reason why I think the evidence is there to show that people that drink moderately fare better is because, you know, actually stress has a much more negative impact than having a small glass of wine.
Yeah.
Okay. Stress, we underestimate the impact that stress has on us physically, mm-hmm. emotionally, you know, it causes so many issues. And if you are highly stressed, you're probably not going to sleep well, you're probably mm-hmm. going to make bad choices, you don't, yeah. you know, it just, you know, stress, I think, is much more detrimental than a glass of wine occasionally. And like, so if a glass of wine does help you to chill out, then don't sweat it. As if you're If you are overdoing it, you know, if you right. are drinking to excess, and if you're doing that, if you've got an alcohol problem, then like I said, we're not even going to talk about it. It's the same yeah. with food. If you've got an eating disorder, again, you know, you need to get professional advice with that.
Right.
But I think if you are somebody who just struggles because of the whole diet culture and the restriction and the rules mm-hmm. you're trying to put on yourself, then that's when you need to just take a step back and relax and chill a bit and just think, you know, a glass of wine is absolutely fine. It's the festive season. You're better off enjoying, you know, a glass of wine more regularly over the season than thinking, right, I'm just going to drink Christmas Day and then I'm going to binge, or I'm just going to drink New Year's Eve and then I'm going to binge. You know, don't do that. Just think, I'm just going to relax, chill out with my family and enjoy a glass of wine two or three nights a week, you know, or, you know, three or four nights a week, as long as you're not right. overdoing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so important to have that mindset when it comes to not only the fun foods, play foods, those kinds of foods, but also the beverages that we take, whether they're alcoholic beverages or whether they're other beverages that have calorie content. So sometimes people restrict things that they enjoy in that way too. You know, we often talk to people about limiting their sugar sweetened beverage intake too, because that can be a problem. But generally that's a problem because people are drinking on it throughout the course of the day, all day. You know, if you're drinking one with dinner at night, that's a very different thing. And so it's a matter of finding this balance with the various kinds of foods and beverages that we're taking in. And if it's something that we truly enjoy, then we need to find a way that we can continue to enjoy that and not restrict ourselves so that we don't end up, like you've said many times here, go off the rails with it later on. Now, how do we've talked a lot about, you know, child nutrition. And so maybe we can kind of wrap up this conversation by talking some about that. So we talk about the division of responsibility. And again, if this is your first time listening, we talk about the job of the parent is what is going to be provided. And the job of the child and teenagers is whether they're going to eat it and how much of it. So how do we tie in fun foods and play foods in the context of this division of responsibility, where we're saying, okay, I'm going to provide these foods for my child. You're telling me I should allow them to eat as much as they want and stop when they're full. How do we bring in fun foods, play foods into that context? And beverages also, obviously not alcoholic beverages for our children.
Not yet. Well, you know, for me, the same principles apply as what we've spoken about before. Although I will say, like Christmas Day, I probably will allow my kids to have what they want. You know, they probably will have chocolate for breakfast. They probably will, you know, there are times when it's okay to just let them have whatever they want. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let them eat as much chocolate as they want. Let them, you know, it's a bit like at Halloween, we spoke about that. You know, let them just have unrestricted access. I probably will do that on Christmas Day. It's not worth the battle of trying to have
right
a routine on Christmas Day. Does that make, yeah.
Yep.
But otherwise, again, you know, it will just be, there will be the same kind of structure and routine in my house where it's, you know, it's lunch, it's breakfast, it's dinner, it's snacks in between. I potentially will be offering them more of the play foods at snack times and things like that. And for dessert, I probably will be offering more of that, but I will stick to our routine for the most part in terms of offering. And, you know, and I will, and again, it's about you as well, making sure that you're modeling that healthy approach and you're not talking about, oh, mummy shouldn't be having this, but she's going to. No, mummy enjoys this. It feels good. And, you know, this is my favorite chocolate, kids. This is my favorite, you know, panettone. Let's enjoy it. It's snack time. Let's just have some panettone. We don't have to always have cheese and crackers.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, that's how I'm going to approach it. And I think that, you know, stick to your routine, stick to having a structure, but just be a little bit more relaxed and play with it a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, that's such a good point with the language that we use around them. Yeah, and that you pointed out there, you know, we don't want to talk about this, oh, I shouldn't be having this, or I'm going to have to go to the gym and burn this off, or I'm going to start being good after Christmas. Those kinds of things, all that kind of language can be detrimental to our kids and give them, start shifting their thinking and their mindset toward that kind of diet restriction mentality. And it may not happen overnight, but it will, if we're constantly doing that and we continue to do that, and they see it every holiday season that mommy is stressed and upset about her weight around these foods, because she's always commenting.
January.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah. So I think that that's a good point to make here, is that it's important to think about the language that we use in that approach. Exactly what you were talking about there. Now, how do we regulate that as far as what we offer for our kids? So obviously we don't just put out the chocolate on the dinner table and say, eat as much of it as you want. Or do we, when it comes to desserts, to these fun foods, play foods, if we're incorporating them as part of the meal, do we just put an entire cake out there and let them have five slices if they want? Or do we treat it a little bit differently than we would other foods?
Yeah. I mean, again, there will be occasions when I do let them have, you know, if they want, but for the most part, because, you know, let's be honest, kids will, you know, when it comes to, especially when it comes to desserts, etc., you know, can I have this, can I have that, can I have all, you know, and to be fair, they don't usually want as much as they think they want, if that makes sense. But no, you know, a dessert or something like that really should be kind of, you know, there should be, what's the word? I suppose you're in control of how much you're allowing your children to have, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we're just serving maybe more of a single serving for each person, exactly, as opposed to saying eat as many servings as you want. Like we would of pasta or bread, we might say eat as many servings as you want until you feel satisfied. But with the dessert, since it is kind of a fun food, play food, than just making one serving available. And they don't have to eat it. They don't have to finish it. You know, it's not there to provide it's not there for a satiating effect on their hunger that they're coming to the dinner table with. That's what the other food is for.
Exactly.
And so,
not with the main meals and things like that. But again, I just prepare. I prepare X amount and they can eat as much of that as is available, but I'm not going to then go and cook more. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely it is like with desserts, definitely, you know, it's one serving and, you know, cause that's what it is. It's there. Like you said, it's something to be enjoyed. It's something to be, but it's not something that's going to necessarily fill them up or, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But having said that, there will be occasions when, you know, if someone's made a cake or, you know, if it's, you know, a certain day or something, then, you know, it will be okay. You know, eat as much of that as you like. But on a general basis, you should still be making sure that there is that structure there and with the availability of food and things. Is that the kind of approach that you would agree with? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. And I kind of think, you know, I was just kind of thinking through this. The holidays are, we can kind of think of those as play fun days to where we go off of our normal way of doing things and we just allow our kids to be kids and have fun. And we allow ourselves to be a kid and have fun. And if that means that on Christmas, I'm going to have 4 slices of pie over the course of the day, where normally I might have one slice a couple of times a week, that's perfectly fine. And it's not something to feel guilty about either. And because again, it's just a small little snapshot of an overall pattern of eating. So if you do eat in that way on those holiday occasions, obviously you may not feel as good the next day, but you certainly shouldn't feel bad psychologically the next day just because you chose to eat more food and chose to enjoy more desserts than you might normally do.
And that's a really good point you made there as well, Jeff, about you might not feel so great the next day. Your body will self-regulate. If you overdo it, and we've spoken about this before, if you do end up, because you're having fun, you're baking the cookies or you're making, you know, your gingerbread house like we do here, and you end up, you know, eating more, because, you know, then and you're not doing that from an emotional place. You're not doing that because you're trying to fix a feeling. You're doing it because you're just having fun because it's Christmas, you know, and you're enjoying your time with your children. But then your body will, the next day, your body will want some, you know, it will want to self-regulate. Mm-hmm. It will probably crave some more nutrient-dense food. You'll probably want more vegetables or you'll probably want you'll be more active potentially as well, because your body wants to burn some of those calories off. So your body, when you allow it, it will self-regulate. It will balance itself out. And I think that's something that people obviously really, really don't kind of tend to understand, that, you know, that your body does want to stay in homeostasis. Your body wants to stay at a stable weight. So it will do what it can to keep that as long as you are listening to it. The more that you try to restrict and put rules on it, you know, the more difficult that it does get, I think.
Yeah, well, and if you're mindful of that impact on your body, if you're in the habit of thinking about how different things impact your body and making decisions based on how your body feels in response to those things, you may actually notice that the next day after a large sort of excess food consumption day. I know this is true for me. The next day, I don't feel hungry at all. You know, if I eat 5,000 calories worth of holiday feasting on a day, that next day, I really almost have to make myself eat if I'm going to eat. And so if I'm just listening to my body, it's telling me, you know what, I got plenty of food yesterday.
Yeah.
And so if you really think about it and are in this habit of just listening to your body, if you're somebody who's kind of concerned with your calorie intake, which a lot of us are, as hard as we try, it still comes back up. Just know that if you're listening to how your body's responding, it may take care of itself in that way. Just like you pointed out with the increase in energy output and decrease in what you end up eating the next day, or even what your body craves as far as the food choices.
Yeah, exactly that. It becomes difficult because when people are dieting and on and off plan, they're not listening to their body. They're listening to some external rules. And the next day they might, you know, because they're so in this plan and they're thinking, oh, I better eat breakfast because I'm going to restrict for the rest of the day. And so they're eating when they're not hungry. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things, because I know we're going to have to wrap it up, but I could go on forever, honestly. I think one of the things that I do just want to point out as well, that I usually find difficult around this time of year, but isn't going to be so difficult this year, is other people's expectations and on not just on me, but on my children. Like people will say to my children, you can't have that until you've finished your dinner, or you're not, you know, you need, and I'm like, no, it's fine. You know, if my kids haven't finished their dinner, they're still allowed dessert. They are still allowed dessert because, like I said, dessert isn't a free for all usually. Mm-hmm. You know, there are times when it is, but on a day-to-day basis, dessert isn't a free for all. You know, food isn't a free for all. It's got its time and its place. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But when other family members or friends are saying you've got to finish everything on your plate, or you're not allowed X, Y, Z, you need to ask your mum, I almost have to say, no, that's not how I do it. That's not how I, you know, it's okay. If he doesn't finish his dinner, he can have his pudding. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's about as well, under normal circumstances, for me, it's not an issue this year because we're not seeing anybody. Mm-hmm. Under normal circumstances, it's also about making sure that your family members, your friends know the approach and understand the approach you're taking.
Yeah.
And also telling them as well, I don't want to hear you saying, should you be eating that? You know, just don't, you know, diet talk. No, thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to kind of wrap up this episode. That's a great way to maybe leave this discussion. That encouragement to stick to your guns as far as your approach toward your own eating and your food. Don't let people guilt you into feeling bad about how you're doing things yourself. Enjoy the time, enjoy the food, enjoy the wine, enjoy the beer. Guys, it won't give you man boobs. We didn't get into that. Yeah, somebody had asked that question, but we won't go into that in this episode. But no, don't worry about it. Enjoy your even your IPAs, which supposedly will cause man boobs, but that's not the case. So do you have any final words of wisdom to share with our listeners before we close this out?
My only words of wisdom are enjoy it and make the most of it and just don't put too much pressure on yourself. You know,
yeah.
Life is too short.
Absolutely. What a great way to end this episode. So we hope you all have a wonderful holiday season. And hopefully next year we'll be able to enjoy huge gatherings again and won't be in this pandemic and have that under control and get back to normalcy. But this year, just enjoy yourselves thoroughly with whoever, whatever size group of people you have around and however much food there is, and no guilt, no shame allowed. Thank you.